Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. I'm Adam Klugman, and we are firing up the masses to refuel the American dream. As you can tell, I'm still trying out various slogans suggested to be my listeners. Please feel free to send me your ideas. Adam@madashellinamerica.com. I told you at the beginning of the show that we're having fun this week, that it's comedy week, that it's blogger week, and that it's extended family week. We're opening up the Mad as Hell family because we want to have fun with everyone. And our next guest is an old friend of mine. His name is Steven Weber. He is a blogger at Huffington Post, where he writes ever so excellently on everything from the culture of extortion to the ghost in the Republican machine to the magical mania tour of America's own psychopath superstar, Charlie Sheen. He is an actor and the son of a nightclub Borscht Belt talent agent. His pursuit of an acting career brought his film debut in The Flamingo Kid, where he and I met, and a role on the soap opera As the World Turns. He appeared in the acclaimed war film Hamburger Hill and made his Broadway debut in The Real Thing, an great play. But it was his 1989 to 1997, that's quite a run, NBC sitcom Wings, where Weber gained national attention. And 10 years later, in Aaron Sorkin's Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, where he received wide critical acclaim. Steven Weber, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
It's a pleasure. If I say anything now, it'll just be downhill from that introduction.
Well, why don't we start with, I have a feeling your version of how you and I met is more interesting than mine. So why don't you tell listeners how you and I know each other?
Well, there was a little club called Plato's Retreat.
Not that version.
No. I mean, we were both younger, callow men in this film called Flamingo Kid. I had a small role, and as people may know, Adam was one of the kind of circle of young character actors in that film, including Bronson Pinchot and Fisher Stevens. Matt Dillon, of course, was the lead, and I was one of many actors. I mean, that was an actor-rich environment, and we all met. We were all pretty much the same age, and we were all staring at all the chicks who were extras, one of which, famously, was Marissa Tomei.
I remember that, and I might add that The Flamingo Kid was the first and last movie I ever made about 100 years ago. Steven Weber, our guest here, blogger at Huffington Post and an actor, went on to have a fabulous career. And I think when I'm talking about Hollywood, I can use the word fabulous. It was a fabulous career. You are a great actor. And we're going to talk about the culture, the toxic culture of the celebrity in this particular society. But at first, I want to just read something. I want to give you a sample of Steven's latest post, because it's really good stuff. I mean, he's that rare combination of actor and person who can think for himself.
Okay. And also, don't forget to say narcissist.
You're one of the few.
Who loves untethered metaphors. That's me.
That's true. But you are one of the few that is not a raging narcissist.
Right.
This is from your post, The Ghost and the Republican Machine. And I really like it. It was the thing that kind of enlivened me to call you and invite you on the show. It's called The Ghost and the Republican Machine. It's fascinating watching the Republican machine work. It's a machine that is an ideological neutron bomb, obliterating lives but leaving the infrastructure intact to be used after the people are gone. God, I love that. The Republican actions belie their ignoble intentions. The rhetoric reveals a dark ambition, which most Americans would normally reject, because it would ultimately strip them of their history and their identity as freedom-cherishing, forward-thinking Americans who don't fear change, who embrace diversity, who laud education and decry discrimination. So the Republicans must mask it as something else, something which pushes people's buttons, distracts them, does everything but tell the truth, because if they did that, they would be rejected outright. Steven, I think that is just money. That is just fantastic.
Well, thanks. I mean, look, I believe in what I wrote, and I know there's a lot of people who are sympathetic to that point of view. And look, we witness what the media does every day and what the right wing does every day, and also what the left wing does on occasion, too.
True.
But I think that the right wing is very, very good at co-opting kind of cultural real estate. You know, I mean, you know, your show has the mad as hell premise. And yet, as we know, Glenn Beck has more or less co-opted that as his own, and it's an erroneous label, because Howard Beale would loathe Glenn Beck.
But the
genius behind the right wing is that they are able to win using all available means, and the things that they reject are introspection, thought, history, because those are the things that would stand in the way of getting their ideas across. And my little blog is a lefty, very cranky way of expressing that. My one fear is that, of course, if I were ever to go head-to-head with somebody who's way more facile and of the opposite ideological bent, I'd fold like a leaf in the flames. You know, that's the beauty of being able to blog. You can do it without having to face anybody but a glowing computer screen.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, because I think there's a difference between being right and being able to simply win an argument with rhetoric. And I think the Republicans have gotten really, really good at winning arguments and making emotional arguments that activate people. When I read your blog, it reminded me of What's the Matter with Kansas by Thomas Frank, where he says, you know, what the Republicans are doing is marshaling public outrage achieve economic ends. And that kind of sums up the whole book. That's how you get people to vote against their own interests, because you marshal their outrage by making incendiary emotional arguments that get people all inflamed, and suddenly now their rational mind is no longer working. That's why I just absolutely loved Ghost in the Republican Machine. We're talking to Steven Weber. He is a blogger at Huffington Post, worth checking out. Do you blog every day, Steven? Is that what I was talking about to my wife about this, and I didn't know. Do you blog every day? Do you post something every day?
No, I don't. I mean, first of all, if I were to think about these things enough for me to blog every day, I think I would really go insane. Seriously, you know, I mean, it's gotten now maybe every 2 weeks or 3 weeks I'll throw one up, literally and figuratively, onto the Huffington Post, because a lot of it is just relentlessly frustrating. I mean, part of the thing that gets me is not only the public's complicity in a lot of these programs, which are against their own self-interest, but also the fact that people have to live their lives, myself included. I'm not a culture warrior, man. I'm just a normal guy. I happen to be an actor. I'm working to make a living. I have a family, and in a sense, I think most people in the country want to be left alone. Want to go about their day. They want to raise their children if they have them. They want to live their lives. They want to eat. They want to feel secure, and that's basically it. I don't think they want to be enlisted in a kind of a civil or in cultural war, which I think is what many ways this kind of corporatized media wants.
Right.
Stuff.
Yeah, they just keep inflaming it, creating these false divisions. I think you're exactly right. We're pretty much all on the same side.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about what we had discussed, which was this idea of the kind of toxic cult of celebrity in this culture and how it keeps us terminally distracted. Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Well, look, most recently you look at poor Charlie Sheen. And I say poor Charlie Sheen because I think regardless of what he's going through and what's wrong with him, or whether you like him or not, I feel like he's as much of a victim of this culture of celebrity, you know, where everything, where people's lives don't matter unless they're played out in public. We witnessed for a couple of decades now people going on various chat shows, Jerry Springer and the like, and doing things that really, if they had any self-respect, they wouldn't do. I'm not saying that they're not worthy human beings, but it feels like if you're not seen, if you're not on TV, you don't matter. And gone are the days of, I used to hear, you know, if you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can be. If you're
Martin
a doctor,
Luther King.
You know, now it's kids are exhorted to become celebrities, not doctors necessarily or lawyers necessarily or social workers necessarily, but those are all means to an end to be famous, as if the alternative is a life of anonymity, and that's unacceptable, and I find that strange. You know, celebrity has become not only a goal, but also, conversely, in my opinion, a drug as toxic as alcohol or cocaine or anything that we associate with, you know, warped behavior. If you were to put the word celebrity, or rather, if you were to take a celebrity's behavior that's kind of rarely discouraged by the industry and inserted the word alcoholic instead of celebrity, their behavior would make a hell of a lot of sense. And I think it's a problem that rarely goes discussed, even among people in our business, our kind of broken, insane business of show business.
Well, I think some of the listeners know that I grew up in that environment, the son of somebody famous, and I found it incredibly toxic, which is why I live in Portland, Oregon.
Portland is the nation's filter. It filters out the toxins.
It's true. It's like the ideological lungs of the world, or the soul filter of the world. And I love it here because it's progressive, because people are real, and I have this side of me that is really not. And I'm always struggling to kind of anchor myself in it. You know, when I saw Charlie Sheen, when I was a teenager, I was out of control, self-destructive, lunatic. And when I first saw Charlie Sheen, my first reaction was, you know, he seems kind of lucid. I mean, there's something there. There's this, you know, Colonel Kurtz, heart of darkness, Joseph Conrad thing. I mean,
right.
There's a certain...
Very articulate.
Yeah, he's very articulate. And there seemed to be a clarity there, a kind of a beyond good and evil approach that he seemed to be taking. But as I've watched it unfold, what I've noticed is that there's just this real emptiness. There's real mania there. There's something really dangerous. And I don't want to condescend him, because the guy is rich and he's successful and he's winning, duh. But I do think that, I guess what I was watching one of his posts, my daughter came to me and said, you got to see this. And I looked at it and I was laughing at it. And then I thought, wow, if I was his brother, mm-hmm. would I still be laughing?
Well, but here's the problem with the greater issue, not only culture of celebrity, but if you want to talk about politically, and is that there's a chasm between what people say and how they act and the reality of people's lives. You know, so much of the legislation, you know, we all went through this kind of very melodramatic, oh my God, they're going to shut us down, government shutdown situation. What always comes to my mind is that scene in The Third Man where Harry Lime is, Orson Welles and Joseph Cotton are up on the Ferris wheel, and Orson Welles explains his position as a kind of fascistic capitalist,
right,
by saying, you see all those dots moving down there? If I give you $30,000, would you mind making one of those dots stop moving? Of course you wouldn't, old man, or worse to that effect.
Right.
I think that's the problem today.
Steven Weber has been our guest, reporting from Hollywood, in Hollywood, as someone who has succeeded in Hollywood.
Reporting from Hollywood.
I couldn't resist saying that. He blogs over at HuffingtonPost.com. He is an excellent blogger, a good friend of mine. I'm really glad we've reconnected, Stephen. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and I hope that you'll come on again.
I absolutely will. You're a lovely, youngish man.
Youngish. Youngish. I did not know that your father was a Borscht Belt talent agent. That explains a lot about you.
That will curl your hair, my friend.
Well, I can't wait to catch up. Steven Weber at Huffington Post, thanks so much for being our guest.
Thanks, Adam. Speak to you soon, pal.
You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ. AM 620. I think I already said that. Your call's next. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's one and only progressive talk station. This is your calls now, 1-866-452-0620, 503-248-0620, or #620 from your AT&T wireless phone. Why don't we follow up on this whole idea of reclaiming the word liberal? Reclaiming the word socialist. Stop running from who we really are. Stop apologizing. Stop euphemizing who we are. It seems that we've been on the run since Reagan. It's like 30 years of us running from who we really are. What's it going to take for us to step up and claim who we are? Okay, shout it from the rooftops. I'm tired. I have taken an oath on this show, and I mean it. I will never call myself a progressive again. I think that when we euphemize ourselves, it's like apologizing. I don't want to be unpopular at the cocktail party. What do you think? The number's here, 1-866-452-0620, 503-248-0620, or #620 on your AT&T wireless phone. Do you call yourself a progressive? Are you more comfortable with that than calling yourself a liberal? And what about the whole idea of talking about where socialism succeeds, not responding to the Soviet Socialist Republic of 25 years ago, or somehow that when we talk about socialism, we're talking about Mein Kampf or Adolf Hitler. But the idea of socialism is one in which we put the common good before the private good. It's not at the exclusion of the private good, but we are creating a society that works for everyone. That seems to be the idea, man. Anyway, Glenn, line one. You're on Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Adam. This isn't something I'm mad about, but essentially, my family has looked at the word womb a man as the word woman as being a shortening of the word womb man. And Grandma always said that the only difference between a man and a womb man is a womb. You've even got nipples, you know, that kind of thing.
Watch it now. This is AM radio. We got to be careful. Don't talk about my nipples.
Oh, okay. But evidently, you have them.
I do have nipples, yes, it's true.
But so the point is to neutralize the notion that somehow womb men are an inferior sex or anything like that, but just a man with capabilities that happens to have a womb. Now, I'm certainly more sentimental about it than that, by and large, but in terms of mutual respect, you know, and by the way, thank heavens they did.
Well, Glenn, thanks so much for the call. I think that there some women might have a problem with this idea that they're a womb man or that somehow that the standard that women are used to be compared to is that they are men in some other form. What about the idea that women stand alone in their own form on equal ground with everyone else in the society, that we don't use men as the standard by which we judge women, but we judge women in and of and for themselves? I think that might be more the point, Glenn. Let's go to line two. Robin in Portland, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You want to talk about the term progressive? Thank goodness.
Yeah, Adam, how's it going? Hey, I used to kind of think along the same lines, but then I decided I was going to combine the two. If you look on my Facebook page, it says political views. I say liberal. So much so that a Republican friend of mine told me I made Ted Kennedy look like Richard Nixon.
You know, Richard Nixon would be a liberal by today's standards.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And then
it's terrifying.
In the combination idea, I just say I'm a progressive liberal.
A progressive liberal. Is that redundant?
Well, no, not really.
Oh, what does it mean to you, Robin, to be a progressive liberal? What does that mean exactly?
Because the right has the tendency to say, you know, that people like the most popular Republican president in the last 50 years, Bill Clinton, was a liberal. He's not a liberal.
I don't think he's a liberal. He's a centrist.
If they say that he's a liberal, then I'll say, all right, well, then I'm a progressive liberal. I'm much farther ahead on the line than he is. And I had a discussion with a couple friends on Facebook that, one of them was saying, I posted a link to Bernie and his top 10 tax avoidance.
I've got that document right here. I know what you're talking about.
They said, Bernie's a socialist. He even claims it himself. And that's one of the things that's wrong with America today. And I said, really? Okay. So socialism is a bad thing. And he said, yeah, it's tantamount to communism. Just like in the USSR, United Soviet Socialist Republic. I said, all right, well.
Well, that was 25 years ago. I think it's a dead issue.
I said, well, let's take that apart, you know. United Soviet Socialist Republic. Okay, so if socialist means that, you're going to go to communism, which the Russians didn't practice to begin with, then you must also admit that republicanism is there, because that's the next word, Republican.
Yeah, you know, you can twist it. You can twist it semantically all you want. Robin, thanks so much for the call. You know, you can twist it around semantically all you want. And when we talk about socialism, I'm not talking, or even communism, we're not talking about the way it was practiced by Joseph Stalin. You know, we're talking about the ideological form of socialism or the ideological form of social democracies. And even more to the point, and the point that I'm really trying to make here, is that we have to stop running from Republicans when they say socialist. Like, they're calling Obama a socialist. Well, you know, people on the left know that that's ludicrous, right? He's no more a socialist than he is a Muslim. If only he were more of a socialist. But my point is, when they call us socialists, when they call us liberals, we run. And I'm saying, no, don't run anymore. Turn around, face it, and say, damn right I'm a liberal, and let me tell you why. Damn right I think socialism is a good idea, and let me tell you why. What are you going to do? Lock me up? What are you going to do? Tell me I can't say what I want to say? This is America. I can say whatever I want to say. But we've got to stop running. We've got to stop apologizing for who we are and what we stand for. When we come back, we're going to talk to some people who know what I'm talking about. They're called the Professional Left. Professionalleft.blogspot.com. They have some skits for us, and they have a show of their own that is absolutely fantastic. You are listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only, thank God for it, progressive talk station. Could you imagine what Portland would be like without AM 620 KPOJ? Could you imagine? Like, I get emails from people in Florida going, it is a wasteland down here. There are no progressive stations in Florida as far as I can tell. People are just desperately parched for liberal thought in places like Florida. Thank God we live in a place like Portland, Oregon. There's so much great progressive stuff here, and I am glad I live here. So now I've told you, it's Blogger Week, it's Comedy Week, it's a Mad as Hell Extended Family Week. And we are very, very fortunate to have our next guests. They are called the Professional Left, and they blog at professionalleft.blogspot.com. They are two bloggers, Blue Gal and Driftglass, from the Professional Left, who have their very own radio show with its very, very funny, insightful brand of political talk. They post new shows every Friday, but you can listen to them anytime at professionalleft.blogspot. I just cannot talk today. Let me try that again. professionalleft.blogspot.com or on iTunes. They are in their 68th week. I'd like to be in my 68th week. That would be really cool. And the good news is they're engaged to be married. So get yourself a cup of coffee. Sit back. We're going to spend a couple of segments with them. They've brought on three really funny skits. I told you, it's Comedy Week, Blogger Week, and Mad as Hell Extended Family Week all show long. Blue Gal and Driftglass, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
Well, thank you,
Adam. Thank you, Adam. Thank you very much.
Oh,
nice. Have that build up. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan. I'm getting to know Driftglass, who is a very talented man and a gifted blogger. Blue Gal, why don't you tell listeners how we know each other?
Well, we know each other from way back in the days of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, did
right.
all that with First Freedom First, and you were making videos, and I was blogging for Separation of Church and State, and doing all kinds of stuff with them, and now we do an annual blog swarm over Easter weekend for a blog against theocracy, which for some reason never goes out of style. We never run out of things to say.
Gee, I wonder why.
So this year, it's April 22nd to 24th. We're doing that again. Bloggers will be blogging against theocracy all weekend, and you and I have known each other since Back in the day
when I was
Church and State issues, yeah.
Right, when I was working for First Freedom First. FirstFreedomFirst.org is the website. That was a great campaign, and it was really great getting to know you. When I thought of opening up the show to bring bloggers on, you were my very first thought.
Thank you.
Because I remember we had such a good time. Driftglass, why did you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the Professional Left conversation?
Sure, Adam. Adam. I blog out of Chicago. I've been blogging now for about 6 years. I got radicalized, I guess you say, around 2004, as several million other people did. I've worked in and around government and private sector and public sector and teaching, and you know, I have the career of a writer. I've done a million things and am currently still writing and not doing any of those things. So I do photoshopping, political commentary, movie reviews. I have a penchant for science fiction.
A penchant. I always say penchant, but that's very American.
And I was delighted.
A penchant.
I was delighted to hear Steve Weber reference The Third Man because I like cool old movies too. So.
He's a cool guy, isn't he? Have you ever read his blog? He's a very cool guy.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. Okay, so let's move on to the professional left. Our guests are Blue Gal and Drift Glass. They have their own radio show called Professional Left, and you can hear it at professionalleft.blogspot.com. So tell me about the professional left. It rings a bell. How did it come to be? What does it mean? What's it all about?
Well, actually, the podcast started before we became the professional left. We started podcasting last January. And what had happened is we were both bloggers. We met up in Chicago for blogger weekends and blogger meetups. And what would happen at these meetups is we would start talking to each other, and all of a sudden, everyone else around the table would stop talking and listen to us talking to each other. And they always ended with, you two need to be on the radio. You two have a great rapport, lots to say, lots of historical knowledge, et cetera. Isn't that
and opinions?
Right, oh, yeah. Yeah, it was one of those, you know, sitting around, you know what people should do? You should get on the radio.
Yeah.
No, you should get on. You guys are funny. You are really, really funny.
Well, thank you. And
the professional left is a reference to what?
Well, the professional left was the former spokesperson for the White House.
Robert Gibbs.
Who decided to slam on liberals, proud liberals like he used to, and sneer at the professional left. And we were sitting, as I recall.
Yes. On your futon.
On my futon, going, thank you, Robert Gibbs.
Fantastic. So you guys have brought some sketches that I really want to get into, and I want to make sure we have time for it. So set up this first clip for us.
This is the one on Mrs. Gingrich, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're going to
do? Yeah, we're going to do Gingrich's diary.
I started doing a fake Twitter feed called Mrs. Gingrich 3 a few weeks ago. And as a result of getting kicked off of Twitter for impersonating Mrs. Gingrich, I started a blog called Mrs. Gingrich's Diary. And we decided, as one of the skits that we would do for you this week, that we would do an audio version of Mrs. Gingrich's diary for you.
All right.
So this is Callista Gingrich.
This is Professional Left, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Driftglass and Blue Gal are our guests. Let's roll Mrs. Gingrich's diary.
And now, Restylane, your supportive partner on your facial journey, presents another episode of Mrs. Gingrich's Diary.
Dear Diary, it's true, I don't like going on the O'Reilly Factor. I always ask Hannity to send his hairdresser, Kenny, over to do my hair. Billow's hair guy, Philippe, was the one who, at the Kennedy Center Honors Dinner, kept taking snapshots of all the wives while Billow would get in the shot and pretend to be doing something naughty behind them. I'm in a tizzy over these morality questions when Nudie isn't on Fox. I told him I thought the whole world should be grateful I didn't stand up and tell them exactly how much I love America. I've sacrificed more than rug burns on my knees for this country, I can tell you. 6.5 years, hello? And what part of the Pope said marrying your very devout Catholic mistress as fully approved by the Holy Roman See, do they not understand? It was a bit awkward between Bill and Nudie after the interview. Bill commented that my hair looked really nice, nothing out of place, and then he sighed under his breath, too bad. Nudie smiled and made that little chuckle he does when he doesn't really think something is funny, and then told Bill he was hoping for a little snack after the interview, and did Bill know if there was any falafel in the green room? Bill stood up, and I could see his cheeks got just a bit red under his significant pancake makeup. He put his face down to my ear and said, stay healthy, Callie, and walked over to Mr. Ailes. Well, we didn't want to be in that conversation, so we left. There are actually days I wish I could wrinkle my brow a little bit. Anywho, after the Factor interview, we went home and went over finances. We're between a rock and a hard place. No money currently coming in from Fox, and if we go at the campaign for real, we have to tell those pests at the federal election thingy every little project we're involved in. As if... I think we should keep the government out of the election process. Also, fundraising in Iowa is such a joke. It's like they're all poor or something, and yet they think they're so entitled to every minute of our time. I haven't had time for a single Restylane shot, as if I could even find one down here on the farm. Thank goodness Nudie figured out that we could self-insure through Gingrich Productions and write the whole medical thing off. Like I was going to pay Cobra or shell out actual dollars for my Lexapro? Still, I have to do battle with the pharmacist at the Council Bluffs Walgreens. But once I've got an actual Blue Cross number, that should chill her right out, as Nudie's daughter says. We're mistaken for twins all the time.
Join us again tomorrow for another episode of Mrs. Gingrich's Diary, presented by Restylane, your supportive partner on your facial journey.
That is fantastic. We're listening. That is from the Professional Left. Blue Gal and Drift Glass are our guests. Professionalleft.blogspot.com. I just can't get it right today. At professionalleft.blogspot.com. They post their shows every Friday, but you can listen to them anytime at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Blue Gal, Drift Glass, what is Restylane?
Restylane is an injectable facial filler, dermal filler that eliminates wrinkles.
Is it like Botox?
He needs them.
Oh, that's just great. I'm laughing all the way through it. You guys are doing great stuff. Now, you guys don't normally do skits on your show, but
right.
You're going to start?
It sounds like it. We had a lot of fun doing these, and might just do some on the weekend.
Oh, I'm flattered. I'm very, very flattered.
Yeah, if you need to remember what Restylane is, it's face spackle.
I was wondering, on your face spackle. Is it like Botox? Does it just paralyze your nerve?
It's a filler. It doesn't relax the muscles. It actually puts filler inside your skin.
You know, like you're injecting paste in your skin to puff it up so it doesn't wrinkle?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that just is like, did you ever see the movie Brazil?
Yes.
You know, when they're like stretching the face and they keep stretching. And then it's like, well, I had an accident with my plastic surgeon. All right. So we want to try to get one more in here. Quickly set this up, because in the next section, we're going to get a little more serious and talk about centrism. And you have a skit on that. But set up this Drift Glass. Why don't you set up this sketch quickly, please?
I think this is the Synergistic Office. Is that right?
Yeah, we're doing it. Yes.
Yeah, and it's how liberals are treated at the White House. It's how the White House believes it should do proper outreach. I believe that centrism is America's greatest sin. It's the thing that allows conservatism to exist, and this sketch came from that.
Yeah, here we go. Let's roll
Hi,
office.
Hi, it's Fran Bluegal for the Professional Left Podcast, and I'm here with Chad Kleebutter. He's President's Special Office of Synergistic Outreach to Progressives. Hello, Mr. Kleebutter.
Hello. We love you down at the SOP office. We listen to you all the time.
Oh, well, thank you. So, Mr. Kleebutter, what is it exactly that you do?
Well, there's a lot of grief from liberals and progressives thinking they're not being looked after by this president. But I can here to tell you, in all of my 16 months in government, I have never seen anyone as responsive to the liberal issues as this president has been. And that's why he's the only president that's ever done this, mind you, established the Synergistic Outreach for Progressives offices from the Bureau of Weight and Measures. We handle all the progressive issues, the Wiccan issues, all the non-gay, non-lesbian, non-heterosexual things. Got to get that global warming down. And we're just being real helpful when it comes to liberal issues. We have a little house. It's a little building. You can probably see it on the Google Maps. It's a little outbuilding. It used to be a gatehouse out in the corner there. And we do our stuff. And about once every 2 or 3 weeks, someone comes out from the White House and picks our stuff up and takes it in for the president.
You don't email the president?
Oh, God knows. You know, we're much more grassroots and progressive and oriented like that. We prefer the sort of the human touch. You know, it's a job. It's a good American job. Whoever the person is comes down from the White House and picks our stuff up. And then if maybe a week or two, someone will come down and tell us, you know, how's it going?
So are you involved at all in the Wisconsin protests or the labor union issues?
What would those be?
Well, like, the middle class and make sure that big oil pays their fair share? And
not so much, no. We're a special office of the Bureau of Weights and Measures. You're going to be looking toward the Chamber of Commerce to handle those big issues like who getting jobs and American jobs and what's up with those. And we get the memos. We see them. We read them.
So are you able to read the blogs from your office?
God, no. We get a print off of them. You know, like I said, about once a week, the green bar paper comes down. You know, we got a little joke down here at the SOP Bureau. We say, one day your prints will come. It's kind of a little joke. And we read through the blogs. We check them out, and we see what's going on up at the lake with the fire and the dog. And the daily cast, you know, we hear about that. And, you know, they're pretty active up there. And we try to stay abreast of that because we know that those are opinion leaders among some of the people who our issues coincide with. Say, this is a liberal radio station, right?
Yes.
You're talking to the liberals out there. So I just want to say hi to all the dozens of liberals who will probably listen to this and to urge you to write me, Chad Kleebutter, Assistant Commerce Department Secretary, Bureau of Weights and Measures, just outside the White House, President's Special Office of Synergistic Outreach to Progressives, or SOP, if you will. We're interested in what you have to say, and you just send me a letter, and sooner or later you'll hear from me back again.
You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. That was a skit from the Professional Left. Professionalleft.blogspot.com is the place. They post new shows every Friday, but you can hear them anytime on professionalleft.blogspot.com or on iTunes. They are going to stay with us through the next segment. We're going to talk about centrism next. They have a really funny skit about how flawed the thinking of centrists really is and how it really has gotten us into all the trouble that we're in. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We'll be right back with the Professional Left. Thanks for listening. And remember to get mad, stay mad, and give them hell. Well, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Our guests are Blue Gal and Drift Glass from the Professional Left. You can hear them at theprofessionalleft.blogspot.com. Their podcasts are available on iTunes, and they post new shows every Friday. They have honored me with bringing comedy skits on, political comedy sketches on. This is the first time they've done this. I feel honored. I love political comedy sketches. It really floats my boat. And we are having lots of fun here in Mad as Hell in America. I told you it's comedy week. I told you it's extended family week. It's blogger week. And we get all of that with Drift Glass and Blue Gal from professionalleft.blogspot.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
So I played that song from the Eagles. I love that on the border. It seems appropriate to our discussion about centrism. So which one of you would like to set up this next skit? And then we'd like to have a call.
We're going to leave it to Drift Glass.
All right, Drift Glass, why don't you set this one up for us?
Well, it is. I have long believed that centrism is what makes conservatism possible.
Right.
It's the big lie that makes all the little lies possible. And so I focus a lot of my writing on people like David Brooks and other people who consistently make moral equivocations and political equivocations between the left and the right that give people on the right an excuse for believing silly things and stupid things and dangerous things. Because if both sides do it, how bad could it be?
And that's the big theme of our podcast. One of our big themes is both sides don't do it.
That's right.
Yeah, both sides don't lie us into war. Both sides don't give tax cuts to billionaires, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots of things that both sides don't do.
I noticed that during the Iraq War, it was one of these things where fair and balanced seemed to be that a Republican would come on and lie, and then a liberal would come on and tell some form of the truth, and somehow that was balanced and fair and centrist. I hate the term centrist. I hate the idea of centrism because it means that we have to squeeze into this tiny little narrow sliver in the political spectrum in the middle, or we're irrelevant. And I think if we think about it in terms of the middle, I think of it as a bell curve where 80% of us live in the middle, but not all of us can squeeze our butts into this tiny sliver in the center.
No, and I wouldn't mind going down the middle of the river so much if the river didn't bend so far right all the time.
Yes, right.
But, you know, you start to notice that as the right has dragged the right further and further into Crazyville, the left has been giving them half the field and half the field and half the field. And
right.
as you mentioned before, you know, today Richard Nixon would be considered a socialist by that standard.
Yes, he would be. Mm-hmm. Our guests are the professional left. They are Drift Glass and Blue Gal. We are going to play their centrist skit. Let's roll it before we run out of time.
Hi, this is Fran Blugal with the Professional Left Podcast, and I'm talking to Corey Fulcrate. He's a legislative affairs patriot at the American Institute for Advanced Centrist Studies. Corey,
hey guys,
are you there?
I'm right here, Blugal. How are you doing? Corey Fulcrate, Advanced Institute for Centrist Studies. Like Walmart employees call themselves associates. Sometimes it's good morning, patriot. You're looking mighty fine on those slacks, patriot. Hey, how about that local sports franchise, patriot? We don't take sides on things, so we don't really mention the names of teams and whatnot. When you're studying why Democrats and liberals have destroyed America, you don't want to come across as biased. You want to come across as a straight shooter right down the middle.
The middle class is in the center, aren't they?
Those would be the 200,000, 300,000, multi-million revenue owners, right? That's who you're talking about there, middle class?
No, I was talking about people that are hunkering down and losing their jobs and their houses out in there in the economy.
Oh, see, that's a problem for us. We don't really consider that middle class. That's sort of working class. So we don't really focus on working class issues. We're much more of a center organization. So, for example, you come down to our offices on M Street, you're going to see you're going to go right down the hall. You're going to see a big picture of Mark Halperin, David Brooks, a Cokie Roberts. These are the kind of people that we find most effective in getting the centrist message across. And that is, no matter how bad you think the right might be doing something wrong, we're here to tell you the Democrats are equally bad.
What about George W. Bush lying us into war in Iraq? What would you say about that?
I would say look at the War of 1812. Look at the Peloponnesian War, the War of the Worlds. George Bush was not lying us into a war. He believed what he was saying when he said it. He didn't say, let's invade everybody, every country with an IRA in its title, for example, or an IBIA in its title. He picked one country. And he invaded, went right up the middle of the country, just like you should, took over the capital, just like you're supposed to, followed the playbook step by step, and it simply wasn't his fault that the Iraqis were not ready for liberation.
Are you out of your mind, Corey?
No. See, that's what a liberal would say. As a centrist, let me just say, that's what a liberal would say.
This interview with Corey Fulcrate of the American Institute for Advanced Centrist Studies is a production of the Professional Left podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Any similarity to actual centrists living or dead is purely coincidental.
You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Our guests have been Blue Gal and Drift Glass from the Professional Left, professionalleft.blogspot.com. They're available on iTunes. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
We loved it. Thank you.
Oh, this was great. Thank you so much. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. When we come back, Meredith Wood Smith from the Democratic Party of Oregon will be here to talk about the $3 checkoff and how you can give your taxes to support the Democratic Party of Oregon. We'll be right back.